Welcome to Jesus-Centric Leadership. I'm here with Pastor Josh. I'm Donna. And today we're talking about navigating conflict with grace. Now, when I think of the church, right, I think of nice church people. Why do you think conflict is so uncomfortable, especially within church, among nice church people? They don't have conflict.
Oh, but wait, there's no conflict in the church.
No.
Like, that doesn't exist. Not at peace with Christ anyway. Like, we never have that. Well, I think we have to start out with this. Like, conflict is a part of any relationship. Like, if I'm going to have a healthy marriage, and, you know, ours isn't perfect, but I think I'm blessed. It's mostly on Sarah, but I'm blessed on a really good marriage. And that means that there is going to be conflict and forgiveness, because ultimately it's because we're people. Like, as people, we're going to have conflict. We're going to have divisions. There's going to be times when I do certain things that are going to hurt them. And that's just the reality of it. So where there's people, there's going to be conflict. Where there's relationship, there's going to be conflict. It's just the way that it is.
Which is why we need our leaders to kind of understand a little bit about how to navigate it, how to manage it, instead of avoiding it altogether. What do you think the problem is, or the dangers are, in avoiding conflict?
Well, then it never gets solved. Like, if, you know, we'll keep on marriage because I brought that one up. Like, if you have a conflict in your marriage and you don't talk about it, right, it doesn't get solved. There's not an opportunity for, so when there's no conversation, there's an opportunity for misunderstanding. Once there is, there's an opportunity for understanding. And understanding can lead to not necessarily fully understanding where the person came from, but at least forgiveness, because you can understand maybe there was a reason for this. And I think when there's a reason for it, it doesn't always hurt so much, right? If there's a reason that this happened and I can understand this, sometimes I can not necessarily agree, but I can at least forgive. But when there's no understanding, we tend to think the worst of people. We seem to think that someone did this not because their life was challenging, but they did this because they're a mean person.
And sometimes it's once in a while, a few times, it's that overthinking. We weren't really even in conflict, but I was afraid we were, and I blew it up in my mind afterwards, overthinking it.
Yeah.
And if I don't approach it or try to resolve it, then I could end up taking some steps back from the relationship.
Yeah.
And it could become hurtful.
Yeah. And like, even like with us working together, you figured out that like, sometimes you have to ask, like, you have to come in, did I do something wrong? Are you upset at me? Because like, I'm just having a bad day and avoiding people. Like, and that does happen. But like, we take things sometimes too personally in relationships. And that's why it's best to just approach and ask.
All right, so we're given a really interesting model about how to handle, a biblical model on how to handle conflict.
Yeah.
So we're going to do a little Bible study here. We're looking at Matthew 18, verses 15 through 20. And Pastor, if you could read that.
Yeah, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him his faults between you and him alone. If he listens, you've gained your brother. But if he does not listen, take one or two along with you, that every charge may be established by the evidence of two or three witnesses. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses it to listen to the church, let him be to you as a Gentile and tax collector. Truly, I say to you, whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. Again, I say to you, if two of you agree on earth about anything they ask, it will be done for them by my Father in heaven. For where two or three are gathered in my name, there I am among them.
Okay, before I ask the next question, can you break that down a little bit for us? Basically, it's saying...
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot in it. It's kind of this, it's this really fascinating flow to, and the Bible usually doesn't give us steps like this, but for conflict, it's fascinating that it does. It tells us, okay, if you have a problem with your brother, go to your brother first, right? If they like shrug it off, they said, no, I didn't do anything wrong, it's not a big deal, whatever, then what do? You take the next time you take the next person. So you talk to your brother, then you take somebody else. Then if those two people, you take you and one person else, if they still don't listen to you, then you bring church leaders in. You bring more people in. And then finally, if they don't listen to you, it basically says, hey, they're not a part of your community. That's what it means by tax collector and sinner. Because what do you do with a tax collector and sinner? Well, you want to reach them with the grace of Jesus, right? So they become that. They're not a part of the family anymore because they're not willing to kind of take the correction of the community. And that's kind of what it's saying.
So why is it so hard as a leader to sometimes follow that biblical model? Because even our best leaders will struggle with this. I've struggled with this. Sometimes I want to jump all of the steps and go, let's go. Let's
blow it up. Nuclear.
Yeah. So why is it so important to follow the steps? And why is it so hard to follow the steps?
Well, let's start with the why is it hard. I think one of the reasons it's so hard is because we expect Christians to be better. I think that's and that's the thing that why conflict in the church is so hard. I've heard a lot of people say this at different times. I expect the world to treat me like that. I didn't expect the church to treat me like that.
Okay, and when you say church, define that.
Faith family, the body of Christians, our church, Jesus Christ. We have hurt people. We will hurt people in the future. So that I think that's one of the reasons it's hard. Another reason it's hard is I think it's sometimes easier to talk about people than do the hard of talking to them. It's much easier for me to come in and say, can you believe what so-and-so did? Because what I'm doing is I know you're going to agree with me, right? Because I only know one side of the story, so I know you're going to agree with me. I think a lot of times we seek agreement and not resolution. We seek agreement, not forgiveness. We seek agreement, not the way of Jesus.
So it's almost easier to rally the troops, in a sense, than it is to face the possible conflict of you hurt me, or this hurt, or I didn't understand.
And there's one more part of it that I think whenever there's conflict, I think there's a part of us that knows deep down that we're probably a little at fault as well. And so I think if I go to you and say, well, this person did this, you're going to agree with me. You're not going to know my fault. If I go to them, I think there's a part of me that understands that, no, I might not be 50% at guilt, but maybe I'm at 20, maybe I'm at 10, maybe I'm at 5. And so we don't want to open that up. So it's much easier to, just deal with that. So
this is the question I don't want to ask, but I'm going to ask.
Okay.
9 times out of 10, when there is a conflict, either with an individual in the church or with the church itself, when I say church, I'm going to say leadership or maybe something was said that was offensive. Somebody didn't reach out to me and I wish they had, whatever that is. And 9 times out of 10, the individual will walk away from the church. Talk a little bit about that and the pain of that as a leader.
I guess I wouldn't say 9 times out of 10 they walk away from the church. I would say in really challenging situations they did. In the worst of the worst, 9 times out of 10 they do. But I think there's a lot of conflicts that even in our church I've seen resolved where there was hurt, where we even messed up and made the wrong decision, and we've been able to walk that through with people and still have a relationship with them. I could, and I won't talk about them, but I could talk about a lot of times where we have been able to work through things. And so I wouldn't say it's as high as 9 times out of 10, but I think the ones we know about sometimes are the ones where the person does push away from the table. And again, I think it really is, a lot of it is this, is that when the church fails, it hurts so much more. Yes. I expect the atheist, the non-Christian, the person who's not in a part of a church, I expect them to be rude and crude and hurt me. I expect that to happen. I don't expect people in the grocery store to be nice to me, but I expect higher for my church. And in one level, I want to applaud that. Isn't that the right view, that we should expect more out of our church?
Yes.
But it's interesting, though, that Jesus, knowing that he wanted more from his disciples, still gave them this pretty set formula of what they're supposed to do when they're hurt. And I think it's because Jesus realized that community was hard. He realized that to be a part of a community, we are going to have to put ourselves out. And then the last thing I would say is they realized that the best relationships only exist when there's hurt and you're able to move through it. Like, those are the best relationships. Like, you think about all who your best friends, the people you're closest with, you've been hurt by them and you've been moved through that hurt. Right. And again, there are some times where there's hurt and it does sever relationships, and that's going to be a fact of life and it is going to happen. But the best relationships we have, we've been hurt by those people. And I think that's just the reality. But the richness and depths of the relationship is because you've been hurt and you've been forgiven, and you've been able to move on. And then you learn something about that person. Like, the hardest thing in marriage for me in the first year was believing that Sarah could love me even when I messed up. Once I learned that and saw that and she embodied that for me, like, the relationship is just so much more has depth after that. So do we have relationships where they can be hurt, but we don't push away from the table, where we can work through it? And I think Jesus is not perfect. There's still going to be messiness. You can follow this perfectly, and there will still be relationships that don't exist anymore.
Right.
But I think it gives us at least a fighting chance when we follow this to go the person first and then bring somebody else in, and then somebody else. It at least gives us a chance to work it through.
Yeah. Before we go into the next question, I think I inflate that number because that's what it feels like.
It does, yeah.
Sometimes when people leave the church, that's very painful for me as a leader in the church. It's hard not to take it a little bit personally. Yeah. It's hard not to grieve deeply when somebody goes, yeah, I'm moving on. I'm going somewhere else. So yeah, well said. I appreciate the way that you kind of brought it more in perspective. So what role do you think humility plays in resolving conflict? As you look at this model, why do we need to be humble as we deal with conflict in this model?
Yeah, I think the big thing is knowing that it's not about me being right. It's about restoring the relationship. And I think that's what Jesus does so well. He talks about, well, really the goal that he has is how to restore the relationship. Even the throwing out and treating them as sinners and tax collectors, it sounds really harsh. But the reason why he says to do it is because he wants those people to be people that we want to reach. Once they're sinners and tax collectors, those are people that the early church was seeking to reach. Those are the people Jesus was hanging out with. Those are the people that they saw as a mission to reach with Jesus. And so even that, even throwing them out, is for the sake to restore the relationship. So this whole thing is, how do I, when I've been wronged, how do I humble myself and seek to restore the relationship? That's what this is all about. And Jesus gives us, I think, and it's crazy because he never gives us a word for word how to reach people, but he gives us word for word what to do when there's conflict, when we have a problem with somebody.
But how do I do that when my emotions are running hot? Mm. So, I mean, there's my side, right? I'm hot, I'm justified, I'm angry at this individual, and I'm locked and loaded and ready to go. And how do I manage my emotions when everything is running hot so that I can step into this model?
Yeah, do. I mean, that's the first thing. Manage your emotions. Get yourself to a place. And that's where I think there's a difference from... let's say, you know, somebody did something to me, and so I need to process it. So I come to you, or I talk to a different friend, or I talk to a counselor, that I get my emotions in check for the sake of I need to have a level head on this before I go talk to that person. I think that's fair. Jesus isn't saying that you go to somebody, that you can't talk to somebody. He's saying the way you fix it is you go to the person. So I shouldn't come to you, though, and say, this happened, you need to fix it, right? That's not what I should do. But it should be more of a, yeah, I'm really struggling with this. Can I use you to process this? And I think you need somebody that's safe, somebody that's not going to gossip, somebody that's going to keep it confidential, because the last thing you need is them going to that person and saying, hey, so-and-so has a problem with you. Like, that's not helpful for anybody. But you, yeah, it's not bad to process that with somebody. And I don't think there's a difference from gossip is telling you so that you'll agree with me. Going to somebody and processing it so that I can have a better understanding of my emotions in the situation.
Yeah.
And that's, there's a fine line there, right? There's a fine line.
There is, because there can also be holy gossip of, will you pray for this situation as I download?
Yeah.
And we're not talking about that either. We're talking about just purely seeking some wisdom before you go.
Yeah. And I would say that's the, there's two ways that you can go to somebody and talk about a problem. You can say, I need to process this because I'm not sure I should talk to them or if I should just let it go. Or I can go to you and process it so that I can talk to them. But the difference is, here's the big difference. Gossip is pointing the finger at somebody so someone agrees with you.
Yes, well said.
Processing it is you doing the work so you can continue in the relationship. And so I think you have to really test your motives. Why? I want to share this with you. Why am I sharing it with you? Because I want you to agree with me, or because I want to restore this relationship.
Yeah.
And if your goal is to restore the relationship, then how you use safe people to process, I think is a good thing to do.
Yeah. Well said. I remember a long time ago, we did a thing. His name is Dave Schlachter, and he brought in peacemakers. And it was interesting because in student ministry around that time, I had a family that got a little frustrated with a decision I'd made. And we had to all sit down with Pastor Hiller. And before the meeting, he said, I need you to start. And by starting, I need you to apologize. Mm. And I was like, what? I'm ready. I have all my points. I'm set. And he goes, no, I need you to do that. You have to find what you can apologize for, because that's humility. And you've got to humble yourself. Mm. And I did. It took a little bit. It took a little bit of time away from it. And then when I came back, you know, I was, and it wasn't, I'm sorry, you aren't getting this, you know, it wasn't that. But it was very much, I prayed hard about it. I looked at it, and what did I need to own? And I think it's not a bad model. It's a hard model to follow when you're stepping into this, when I'm going to go to that person one-on-one. And I can't even give an example of what that might be for you, because I think it's different for every person.
Yeah.
To be genuine and really own something in the situation.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think we have to understand that in every relational conflict, there has to be two sides. And I can even believe in my mind, I think, that it's 95% their fault. But it's so disarming, and you set the tone when you confess. And so I think, like, whenever we have a problem with someone, like, starting with that idea of, I haven't been perfect here. And it might even be saying, you know, my problem here is I probably assumed things that weren't true. And I'm just going to tell you, I'm going to tell you in a moment how I was hurt, but I'm just going to confess my assumption and my feelings,
and
I'm sorry for that, but I wanna work through this because your friendship matters.
Yes.
But I think that we do it every Sunday. We confess, right?
Yes.
We confess to God. Like, we as Lutherans, we should be quick to confess. There's a reason that's at the start of pretty much every single service we do. We should be quick to confess. And I think that goes for our relationships as well.
Yes. So this leads into this question really well. How do you balance grace and truth when addressing conflict? So sometimes I want to go truth, then grace. I want to lay it out. But how do you have a fine balance of that as a leader?
Yeah, I think one thing I'm starting to, like, Jesus talks a lot about bringing it into light. Like, and I'm really starting to play with that in my mind a lot, that sometimes the most gracious thing we can do is put it in the light. Because when we put it in the light, we can deal with it. When it's in the dark, we can't deal with it. And so I think there's a lot in the Bible about bringing it into the light. And so I think by bringing it to the one person first, by starting with an apology, admitting that this is at least partially on me, and I wouldn't say this is 5% my fault. I would never say that. Like, I would just own up what my part is, and then see if they'll reciprocate. But I think by bringing it into the light, we have the chance of working it through. By keeping it in the dark, the only real chance is that it's going to still fester in our relationship. And so I think actually sometimes the gracious thing to do is to bring it into the light and then show them that we show grace once we bring it into the light and still love them as a friend. Like when I'd mess up and Sarah would be hurt and she would tell me that hurt, like she doesn't have a chance to show grace by just ignoring it. She has a chance to show grace when she brings it into the light and still loves me afterwards. And so I think that's like a model that should be in all of our friendships. Like, and I'm not saying bring every little detail up.
Right.
Right. But like when you are hurt, it's festering for more than a week, it's your spouse, probably more than a day because you're seeing all the time, but like bring it into the light when it's festering, so that you have the opportunity to show them grace. That their value to you isn't just in how they act, but their value to you is in your relationship. Yeah.
Okay, so we look at this model, and leaders are like, oh, so you're saying I might hit conflict as a
no,
leader.
No, you will.
Yeah, right. And now we look at this model, and I'm going to repent first, and then I'm going to walk through this, what happens if we can't get to the resolution I wanted? What happens when the road to resolution gets really mucky? What do we do then?
Well, I think that's a value in bringing somebody else in eventually. So like sometimes your marriage needs a marriage counselor. And sometimes...
Which is not a bad thing.
No, it's not. Like it's valuable to have that somebody else helping you hear what each other is saying. I think that's sometimes what the problem is. But that's why I think he says bring somebody else in. Because again, and I think this is where we really have to check our motives. What's my biggest motive? Is it to be heard? That's a good thing. Is it to have them see it my way? Is it to be right? Those are the motives we kind of have to check in this. The motive Christ has is that your brother would be restored in relationship to you. That's the goal of this, is that the relationship to be restored, not either person being right. And so I think that's what we really have to check our heart with when it comes to conflict. If you want to be right in conflict, you're going to end up losing because you're going to push people away. If your goal is to restore the relationship, to work through the hurt, then I think you have a fighting chance to work through it.
So is it okay to say, we're not going to see eye to eye on this, but I do hear you and I love you.
Yeah.
And we're going to figure this out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think in terms of the church, sometimes the hurt is just so deep that they maybe have to move on for a season, and that hurts and that's hard, but that does happen. Certain sins are harder than others. Certain sins you can work through in marriage. Certain sins are harder to work through in marriage. But the reality is, I think if we follow it, we give a fighting chance to at least do the next right thing. And that's all we can do. Apologize and ask for forgiveness and grace. But sometimes it is. Yeah, we're not going to see eye to eye. And I have relationships where we don't see eye to eye on everything. You and I don't see eye to eye on everything. Sarah and I don't always see eye to eye on everything. But you don't need to have a relationship. But you do need to talk about it when you don't and work through it.
Be respectful.
Yeah, and figure out how you're going to have a relationship within the midst of that. But you're never going to find somebody that agrees with you 100%. And if you're waiting for that, you're not going to have any friends. You're not going to have any relationships. You're not going to lead anybody or follow anybody or do anything with anybody. And that just seems like a miserable life to me. So compromise and... figure it out.
So kind of coming to the end of our conversation, but I've sat with you when you've shared with people, hey, I need you to go to them first. Have you gone to them first? I need you to do that. And then if that doesn't work and I am brought in on the conversation, I need you to do that in a way that's not going after them in a sense, right? And I've heard this in a lot of different situations. Why is that? Why do you stay so true to this model? Like, you don't deviate. And even, I've seen even at times you've wanted to jump in, you're like, no, stay with this. Stay with this model.
Yeah, because if Jesus said it that way, he must have meant something would work, that there's something to it. And the other thing I see in the back of it is when someone brings something to you, you know, you're a leader, so they bring something to you. This person did this. Until you have a chance to hear the other side, like, you don't know what's true, because there's always two sides to every story. And so, like, and again, if this is the model Jesus sent, it wasn't me going to fix the relationship. It's them. Because the reality of, and we've talked about this on another podcast, but a while ago, but if I'm the connection in your relationship, like, if I'm the only reason you talk together, then my relation, your relationship with somebody else is centered on me. Like, at some level, like a counselor's job. So a couple comes in, they have struggles in their marriage. They can only talk through the counselor. The counselor's job isn't to be in that marriage forever. His job is to move outside, or her job is to move outside of the marriage and let them have a conversation. But if whenever you have a problem with someone, you come to me and I help fix it, or I help broker peace. Our relationship isn't based on us. It's based on the person who brokered the peace. And so I think that's what Jesus wants. He wants you to have an actual relationship with people that's based on your mutual trust, not me getting in the middle of it.
It's you've used the marriage analogy a lot, but I almost hear siblings also.
Yeah.
Like you get in the middle of siblings, and that can be a whole thing. And they've got to figure it out.
Yeah.
And sometimes they have to figure it out apart from their parent. So that they do grow stronger in how they handle it.
And how many stories have we heard where I was close to my sibling, or my only relationship with my siblings was through my parents, and now my parents are gone and I don't talk to my siblings.
Right.
Right? Like, if we don't, and I think this encourages you to go to that person. And again, if they don't listen, then you bring somebody else, but that's not your first call.
Whether it's a spouse, whether it's a sibling, whether it's somebody that you're in ministry with,
yeah,
or someone who's a part of your church family,
yeah,
and yeah, you're doing hard with them. What's the biggest takeaway from today?
Just that Jesus values the relationships we have with other people. And that's hard. I think we can't just say, oh, relationships are easy. Any relationship worth having goes through seasons of hard. And so I think, you know, once a relationship worth having, work through those seasons of hard.
I like that. Great takeaway. Thank you so much for joining us for Jesus-Centric Leadership. We'll see you on our next episode.